But our YouTube and Twitch audience will get to hear it. You won't get to hear it if you're listening on the radio.
That felt mean-spirited, like as if I've ever sworn before. Like, wait, don't on, go right on, to the
hold on,
button.
Hold on, where is it?
I forgot you had your buttons over there.
Where is it? Where is it?
Whatever, you can't find it.
Oh, I found it. Let's see.
Oh.
There we go. Yeah.
Whatever. Don't laugh at that, Carter.
Anyway,
one
if anyone...
time I let it fly. 25 years in the business. One effing time.
Whoa. You better be careful.
Well, and I won't play the game that I normally play when you're back there because you're so good on the dump button, and I don't know if Carter's doing a great job, but I don't know if he's quite as adept as you are.
And a big red button in the top right corner of the board, Carter. Just keep your finger over and
dump.
Over it.
Because I'll try to bait Grandy into it with O. Schmidt and other things and
false
just
start.
To see if he's paying attention. So
you get me to jump.
Yeah.
False start on the offense.
Anyway,
five-yard
finish
penalty.
The read. You're doing great.
So if anyone swears, you're going to hear it on Twitch and YouTube. Subscribe to the channel for all 95.7 The Game content on both Twitch and YouTube, and make sure to hit the thumbs up button on YouTube if you like the show. We appreciate it. Powered by First NorCal Credit Union. And remember, you can download the free Odyssey app as well by scanning the QR code in the bottom right corner of our Twitch and YouTube streams with your smartphone. And that way you can get another place to find all of our content, including all of our interviews, full podcasts, full shows, individual hours, our best segments, all that and more on the free Odyssey app, on our YouTube and Twitch channels, and wherever you get your podcasts as well. Willard and Dibs, Grandy in for Willard. So Dibs and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game, talking storylines from Niners camp. What's a bigger concern to you right now? Is it Trent Williams or is it Brandon Ayuk? Ayuk is holding in maybe a little bit of positive momentum, at least some perceived positive momentum from outside the building because of the way in which Ayuk walked up to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan yesterday at practice. It seemed kind of happy, encouraging at the very least, but he is holding in. Trent Williams, meanwhile, is holding out and is subject to fines. We don't know if the Niners are in the process of finding him, if they're going to relieve those fines, if they do, but he's not there at all. For Dibs, he's a little more concerned about the Ayuk situation. I'm a little more concerned about the Trent situation. However, Dibs is not really that concerned at all. I think you make a good point when it comes to the complexity of the Ayuk contract. I think one of the reasons, Dibs, why I'm not that concerned by the Ayuk thing, and maybe me being more concerned by Trent, has more to do with how little I'm concerned by Ayuk. It's because I think ultimately maybe him playing on the fifth-year option is the Niners' best course of action going forward. I don't know if they really have to do any contract extension with Ayuk over the next month.
They don't have to, but I think it serves them a lot better to do that. And if, you know, you want to play that out, so if he goes in on the fifth-year option, and let's take the franchise tag and put that on the side because okay. The Niners don't use it. And Mark and I have gotten into this debate far too many times.
Last time they did was what? Robbie Gold,
a kicker. So, yeah, franchise tag a kicker and it costs you, what, $6 million instead of $4.5 million or whatever the number is. They do not like to use the franchise tag. And really, if you look around the league, most teams don't use the franchise tag. It's a good threat more than it is an actual practice.
The biggest one this offseason has been T. Higgins with the Bengals.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's an organization that, honestly,
is there anyone else this offseason that's been tagged?
I would have to look it up. I don't think that there was. And so the franchise tag is more of a threat. Like, you know, if you don't do XYZ, then we're not going to Disneyland. And then your kid, oh, you know, boy, okay, well, you know, the mom is serious this time. But, you know, more and more teams don't use it because it's bad business. So you get a player to come in on a one-year deal, guaranteed. You pay him the average of the top five money at that position. And, you know, most likely the player is going to be mad. And at that point, they're going to leave at the end of the year and you get a compensatory third round pick for all your trouble. And, you know, you can use a tag twice. And a few teams have done that historically. You've tagged the player twice and done that. But that player that you tagged twice is going to leave at the end of that second tag anyway. So I do think that if you don't sign Brandon Ayuk and you let him play the fifth year option, and he's making $14 million, he's probably going to be mad. He'll play ball, and he'll play hard, but at the end of it, when he's a free agent, what's the likelihood of him wanting to stay with the Niners to not get as many targets and not get the money that he thought that he was worth? And if he goes and he balls out and has a big year, well, now it's going to cost you more to keep him because the market keeps going up. The cap goes up. The market goes up. So if Ayuk has another year like he did last year, where he's second in the league in yards per catch and he's got, you know, 1,300 yards and all the other numbers and he goes to the playoffs and he's a baller, well, now it's going to cost you even more than it does now. So if you're the Niners and you like the player, and I think that they like the player, you want to get this done now before he has a chance to go off and play great.
There are a handful of other players who have been tagged. There's a couple of different tags. The one that we're talking about is the non-exclusive franchise tag. That's the one that's used the most often. And a lot of defenders. Josh Allen, the pass rusher for the Jaguars, non-exclusive franchise tag. Brian Burns, linebacker for the Panthers, also. Kyle Duggar, Patriots safety. T. Higgins, that's the big one, the wide receiver from the Bengals. Jalen Johnson, Chicago Bears defensive back. Justin Madubuike, defensive tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. Michael Pittman, wide receiver for the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, then he signed.
Yeah. They tagged him to begin. Now he signed. A couple of others, L'Jarius Sneed, corner for the Kansas City Chiefs. Antoine Winfield Jr., safety for the Buccaneers. That's just about it. So there's a few others, and you're looking at what it might cost you a year from now, the franchise tag. Michael Pittman, this season, about $22 million. That's what it would have cost to franchise tag a wide receiver, or T. Higgins, same thing there.
Well, that was before all the other contracts came in, so I do think if you
next year it would be lot more.
A lot more, especially when you look at the average annual that's come in with Amon-Ra making 30 and the other deals that have signed. Justin Jefferson has reset the top of that market, so the franchise tag for wide receiver probably goes up to 25 or 26 next year.
Yes, the average of the top five salaries at the player's position over the last 5 years. So it includes the last. So it'll be an uptick, maybe not as much as we previously thought. Yeah. Or 120% of his previous salary, whichever is greater, since Ayuk's on his rookie scale deal. I'm sure the average of the top five salaries will be more than 120% of his salary. So you're right. I mean, that is going to be, it's not like you're going to be saving a ton of money, but you just can forget about the whole headache of having to try to figure out a contract with him right now. And I also think, I mean, the Niners are completely well-respected across the league, both, I think, in front office circles and in player circles. What is it, that report card that comes out every year? I don't know if it's in the postseason or early in the offseason, whenever it does come out. And the Niners are consistently near the top in a lot of those categories, whether it's how they treat their players and their workout facilities and recovery and the training staff and how they treat families and all of that stuff and how they handle their players. Generally speaking, they have a pretty good report card across the board. I also
I'm looking at it here from NBC Sports, and they came in number two. It was Shanahan and Lynch were right behind Andy Reid and Brett Veach from the Chiefs. So number two.
And so they're up there in a lot of those kind of categories. So, and there's a reason why they are up there. Generally speaking, they've been able to work out these really, really expensive deals with all of their star players. Just about every single star that they have drafted, they have re-signed and kept. And a number of those are still on the roster right now. There's a couple of exceptions, of course. DeForest Buckner is the most notable one. Our Eric Armstead, maybe in a similar, slightly different category because he was getting a little further on in his career. But he also left this past offseason. But generally, Dibs, the Niners have taken care of their guys. I also don't think it's the end of the world if you just play a little bit of hardball for the first time in a while. I mean, I guess they've played a hardball in these negotiations, but you actually go through with it and you say, Brandon, whether or not you actually intend to franchise tag him or not, you just say, Brandon, sorry, we're not giving you what you want. No matter what, you'll play on this fifth year. And if we don't get a deal done, you don't change your demands, we're tagging you. I don't think there's that big of a negative side effect here if the Niners just play a little bit of hardball and actually go through with it for the first time in a long time.
What that negative side effect is, because if you're a free agent and you see that and you see that they've taken care of so many of their players, and then now with Brandon Ayuk, you're going to draw the line and then you're going to go out and give Brock Purdy 55 or 60 million. And, you know, Jed York's already come out and said, yeah, Brock's going to reset the market and he's going to get whatever he gets. And we're happy to do that. And meanwhile, Brandon Ayuk is a player who has done everything he's been expected to do. He's been a great player. He blocks, and whatever time he spent in the doghouse, fine. That's all part of the evolution of a player. And now when he comes up, you're going to deny him and you're going to make him play his fifth year option. And then you're going to tag him. I do think that that sends a negative message throughout the league. And we talked about this as it pertains to the Giants, not New York, but San Francisco with Jorge Soler. So you give him 3 years of free agent money, and then 4 months in, you ship him off to Atlanta. I wonder what message that sends to other free agent sluggers who might try to come here. This is not to, you know, conflate baseball with football, but I do think their reputation's been so good, and John Lynch has said it many, many times. We draft him, we like him, we keep him, and we pay him.
We're proud of our record here.
Proud of our record. The only one that got away was DeForest Buckner, and that was a calculated move, and you heard the TK podcast, and Kyle Shanahan really laid out a great explanation as to why, and you got a first-round pick back, and it, you know, the pick didn't turn out, which is why we think differently.
Javon Kinlaw, no longer a Niner.
Yeah, about DeForest Buckner. If DeForest Buckner would have turned into a real usable number 14 overall player who was a good player and somebody who was a mainstay Niner, we'd think differently. So this one becomes a little bit more tough, because if you keep Ayuk on the fifth year option and you don't franchise him and he leaves, you get a third round comp pick, or you franchise tag him, and then you're still paying two guys more than $20 million next year if you keep Debo.
True. I think the quarterback point is a good point to bring up. You're already talking openly about how you're gonna pay Brock Purdy. You're going to have to pay Brock Purdy.
You mean pick Purdy, don't you?
Pick Purdy.
Pick Purdy. Because all he does now is throw pick. He's like one of those sprinklers that you see pick.
That's what training camp sounds like right now.
Totally right now. It's like the old school sprinkler. Yep. Pick,
then
all the way back. Anyway.
You concerned about that?
No, I'm not concerned. What I'm concerned is with people who are concerned, because everybody, practice stats. Brock Purdy, 5 of 11, 3 picks. Oh, my God. Quarterback controversy. Give me a break.
Totally.
I'm not concerned at all. I don't mean to, you know, divert the conversation too soon to the Brock Purdy part of it, but everybody wants to wring their hands at practice stats where the offense is not game planning for the defense. They're just running plays. And the defense, a lot of times, they know the plays. And so Brock Purdy has to make plays to guys who are, right now, a lot of them are twos and threes in the team. And, you know, Brock Purdy's not going to hold the ball and check down. He's running the play. So if the play is to run a 12-yard dig to Debo, Brock Purdy's going to make that throw. In a real game, even if that was the call and Brock Purdy got to his back foot and looked and it was covered, he would either keep it, throw it away, check it down, or run it. But right now in practice, you make that throw. And so when you make that throw in practice, it might get picked off, and that's okay. That's what you want him to do. Make the throw. Give it a try.
I think largely I agree with you. I don't think interceptions in training camp and practice and preseason, maybe a little different in preseason.
Maybe when Jimmy threw like 6 or 7 in Denver that day and just the entire internet melted down during joint practices. That was like 5 years ago.
Oh, Jimmy.
Turned out that was actually a real thing.
Yeah, I should have been concerned by that. We'll have to go back and search through the tapes. Whatever. What show were you doing 5 years ago?
Joe Lo and Dibs.
Joe Lo and search through the tapes. Dibs had the same exact take he just had back then. Don't worry. Just training camp. You get all these interceptions out now. You're experimenting. You're trying things.
I was playing a different role on that show. I was a little bit more of the wiseacre and a little bit more inflammatory. Trying to poke low, like, you know. And I'm sure Joe Fortenbaugh had a 7-minute setup on exactly, you know, the history of interceptions in camp. And, you know, Lowe did his thing. And then I, you know, whatever, Chicken Little. I was a little bit more inflammatory back then. I'm much more measured and mature now.
Way to go, Diz. We're proud of you.
I've grown.
We're proud of you. I think I largely agree that it's not something to really be that worried about right now. It is funny to see all the reactions and how it does absolutely catch everyone's attention. And we can get into some of the reasons why some people think it's happening and if that holds any truth. But just play devil's advocate, I guess, here for a second, Dibs. If you were to look back at some of the reasons why the Niners lost games this past year, and again, they were the one seed in the NFC and they went all the way to the Super Bowl. Brock Purdy did throw an okay, decent amount of interceptions, and specifically in the games they lost were the games that he threw those interceptions. The Christmas Day game, Christmas evening game against the Ravens stands out.
Christmas Eve massacre is what that was.
Kind of an anomaly, and they got behind, so they had to keep throwing, and maybe that's why, and maybe part of the reason why his stats are so good is because this team is so good and they got out ahead so often that he could kind of cruise for a lot of games. Again, this is not necessarily what I think. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, but the Bengals game, he had a really rough interception in the red zone. He threw an interception that ended the game against the Vikings on that Monday night game, I think it was, in Minnesota, when the Vikings were without Justin Jefferson and they still won that game. That was the infamous moment where Steve Wilks calls the play at the end of the first half. He called the blitz and he left the rookie receiver from USC, Jordan Addison, out one-on-one deep down the middle, and the Niners should have ripped that ball away, but they didn't. It turns into a touchdown, and that was kind of the beginning and the end of the Steve Wilks era, but that game ended with a Purdy interception. So to play devil's advocate, I could point to a number of instances where maybe one of the few weaknesses on the Niners offense tended to be a handful of Purdy interceptions.
That's fair. And you could look at the Super Bowl and you could see a Christian McCaffrey fumble in the red zone that, you know, kind of swung that game early on. True. And, you know, you can look at a number of different small moments. But in general, Brock Purdy's been pretty good with the ball. He hasn't been reckless. And yeah, the Baltimore game really kind of skewed it because I think he threw four and they threw five as a team.
Yeah,
if memory serves. He ended up getting...
Sam Darnold threw one at the end.
Yeah, I mean, you could say he got pulled, which is a little bit of a pejorative, but he got taken out because they were so far down. And yeah, it was one of those times where he'd thrown four and enough was enough. Let's go to the backup.
Four.
And yep. You're going to lose anyway. So that, I think, kind of skewed his overall total. But when it comes to practice, I do think that we have to take a lot of this with a grain of salt because if I was Brock Purdy and I was in practice, I would not be worried about checking down or, you know, avoiding making a tough throw. Even if somebody is covered, you run a play, and if a guy's, you know, open or even kind of open, make the throw. And you don't want to get into a spot where you're just checking down in practice instead of, you know, giving your guys a chance to go down there and make a play. And plus, the defense, they've looked really good. You're going up against one of the better defenses in football, so
not all the stars are playing out there,
right? But a lot of them are, and even, you know, the backups, the guys who are in there are still really good players. Whether it's, you know, guys who aren't normally going to start, or maybe they're going to come in this year, you're going up against one of the better defenses in football.
So last year, 11 interceptions for Purdy in the regular season. Of the 11, 9 came in the 4 losses that he played in. So the Niners lost 5 games in the regular season, but he did not play in the last game of the regular season.
So 9 of his 11 came in four losses.
Wow. Okay. You had the 4 against the Ravens, you had 2 against Cincinnati, 2 against the Vikings, and 1 against Cleveland. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And you had 2 interceptions in the 12 wins. 2 interceptions against, 1 interception each against Seattle, and both games against Seattle, at Seattle and at home versus Seattle, were his only interceptions and wins.
Wow.
Of the 11 interceptions, 9 were in losses. I guess you could kind of play the chicken or the egg game. Like, did they lose because of the interceptions, or did he throw the interceptions because they were losing? And I guess you could kind of go both ways. You got behind, you got to throw, then you throw interceptions and whatever. We look at it after the fact and we say, well, those were the reason that they lost, his interceptions. Some of them, maybe, not all of them.
How many against Cleveland? Was that 1 against Cleveland?
1 against Cleveland.
That's a game they should have won.
And he led them on the drive at the end of that game.
If the kicker makes a kick that's a makeable kick, it's a 90% kick, then we don't even have to worry about that one. And one of the other games, maybe it was Minnesota, he had a end of the half Hail Mary that got picked off. That it counts as an interception. I'm not trying to excuse it, but
it might have been that game.
For me, the real anomaly was the Baltimore game where he made a couple of bad throws, and there also were 2 tip balls in that game, balls that got batted at the line. One of them was, you know, off a receiver. Those were just picks that, you know, they're his fault because he threw the ball and the other team got it, but they weren't just classic straight-up Jimmy G giveaways. And I'll have to go back through the Baltimore tape because I remember hearing you on with maybe Willard or at a time, and you guys were talking about that game. And maybe it was Willard, because I went back and watched those 4 picks, and of those 4 interceptions, a couple of them were pretty fluky. Batted balls, tip balls that just happened to fall into their arms.
That was more like a night where just the bounce of the ball went against you.
Yes.
It probably also, you could be fair in describing it as one of Purdy's worst games, but it's not like it was throw right out of linebacker.
One of them was like, oh God.
One of them was bad, yeah. But there were so many, and I don't mean to bury Jimmy Garoppolo, but like there was Jimmy Garoppolo turnovers and interceptions and some of those really bad ones. I remember distinctly. I forget which year it was. It must have been to the end of the 2020 season. That was such a terrible season. It was towards the end of one season, and I remember calling it when it happened. That was the last we were going to ever see of Jimmy Garoppolo in a Niner uniform. And he threw just a middle linebacker, whoever it was, might have been Bobby Wagner at that point, just standing there, middle of the field, dropped back into his zone, maybe 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage, just standing there. Crossing receiver is coming over, and Jimmy just locks eyes with the crossing receiver, and he does not see the middle linebacker just standing there, and he throws it right at him, sticks it between the numbers. Easiest interception I've ever seen. Like, not all interceptions are created equal.
Right.
And I think... Maybe a couple, one or two, but for the vast majority of his 11 interceptions, Purdy's 11 interceptions, they weren't anywhere near how bad some of those Jimmy Garoppolo interceptions were during his 9 or 10.
Yeah, and I just looked at YouTube, and shout out YouTube, and you know, watch our channel, don't watch this, but Brock Purdy, all four interceptions in the Week 16 game. The first one was a red zone straight giveaway. And then
I remember that one, yeah.
The second one, the right defensive end jumps up and two-hand bats it back over Brock Purdy's head, and they picked that off.
Such a weird game.
The third one was a tough throw where the defender got an arm in and it popped it straight up on George Kittle, and that was a pick. And then the fourth one, I'm looking at it here, they're down 23-12 early third, and it was a straight up telegraphed Jimmy G special right to the Ravens. And at that point it was, all right, let's get Sammy D up.
Yeah, and then he threw one as well.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do?
But I was looking at the game log, the play-by-play for the Minnesota game. I correctly said that he threw the interception that sealed the game. However, what I forgot about, you were thinking maybe it was end of the first half, Hail Mary.
Right.
Not in this game. Maybe that was a different game. In this game. He threw interceptions on each of the Niners' last two drives in that Minnesota game. And that's why they lost. Both of those drives ended in touchdowns, and both of them, one of them happened right around midfield. The other one happened just across midfield. So the Niners were driving, and a couple of interceptions ended. But we're not going to kill this guy and say that he's not the quarterback of the Niners because of a bad couple of drives at the end of one game. But if there was an area, I think, for Brock Purdy to improve, Dibs, it might be fewer of those kind of mistakes, fewer of those turnovers.
Yeah, late turnovers and turnovers that ultimately swing the game. And you know, you got me thinking and you got me interested in finding it. And here it is, second and 10 from the Vikings 40, 34 seconds to go. And they're down by 5. So obviously they need a touchdown, steps up, throws, and wow, great pick. Game over, night, night.
Cameron Bynum with the interception.
Yeah. Ooh, and a big eye roll from Shanahan. Head back, eye roll.
Have you gotten to that moment in receivers yet, that game? The Netflix series receiver?
No, I haven't been able to revisit.
There's a good moment at the end of that game where Purdy throws an interception. The first guy to run up to Purdy after he throws that is George Kittle. And I forget exactly what Kittle says, but it must be something along the lines of, hey, keep your head up. We'll be good. We got you, kid, or something like that.
Yeah, I think I saw that earlier, maybe episode 2 or 3, where he goes up and gives him the slap, slap, slap on the chest.
Like, one of the takeaways from receiver, George Kittle, obviously a great person. A very good teammate.
Amazing
teammate.
And a
very just awesome person in general.
Yeah, and that's partly why I cannot wait for this year to start, knowing more about George Kittle and Debo and his personality and Brandon and Christian now married and Brock is married. It's going to be a fun year for these guys.
It is. I can't wait. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibs. It's Dan Dibley, Mark Randy with you. Willard off. He's back on Monday. We got more coming up on the other side. Are you worried by Brock Purdy's interceptions? There might be reason to. We'll tell you why on the other side as Willard and Dibs continues. We are presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Give us a call, 888-957-9570. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.